hard words of Jesus. Not easy listening words, right? The disciples say to Jesus in our text, increase our faith. And how does Jesus reply to this? If you had faith, even like a little tiny mustard seed, you could say to the sycamine tree, be rooted up and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. You know, when I first read this, it struck me as a very sarcastic remark at best, and a snarky one at worst on behalf of Jesus. If you had, you could remove mountains, he says. If you had just a speck of faith. If you had that speck of faith, you could save yourselves. In the eyes of Jesus, the disciples have no faith whatsoever. None. Zippo. Even a little bit could work wonders, Jesus says. But Jesus says they don't even have enough to call it a mustard seed. Evidence? The trees remain rooted in the ground and the mountains haven't moved one inch. Clearly, his reply is at the very least an insensitive one to an honest request from his disciples, who are not asking that question out of any snarky place, but really want to have more faith. And at worst, it exhibits a callous cynicism from the master of faith himself. But Jesus, you see, isn't one who offers thoughtless answers. He's not one that just flips out and has no reason for whatever he's saying. Rather than insulting his disciples, Jesus, I think, is cutting off their assumptions about faith and life itself right there. Just cutting them off. Faith, you see, isn't anchored in God. What? That's right. Faith is not anchored in God. You all have faith naturally. You've had it since the day you were born. It's not about heaven, and it's not even about something spiritual. It's about the reality of having a vision into what can be that is not. On the contrary, faith changes the landscape of our world. It changes it all the time. It moves more than mountains, and it transplants far more than trees. It sees in a grain of sand technology beyond your wildest imaginings. It sees within a grain of sand semiconductors and computers. It sees in the minerals of the earth steel and the girders that scrape our sky. It sees in the atom power beyond our wildest imaginings, so much so that we've changed the nature of the world without changing our perceptions of it. Faith isn't a passport to heaven, nor is it a belief in God even. Faith is simply the act that you put in every single day without even thinking about it, of planning for the next moment ahead, which is not promised to you. If you plan to get up tomorrow morning, get ready to go to work or do whatever you're going to do, you're living by faith. You're not living in any certainty. You're living by faith. Faith is simply, you see, in this understanding that Jesus has of it, a new understanding of the way that the world can be rather than what it is. Faith sees with amazing clarity the reality that others do not yet see. It's why Beethoven heard in his mind's eye what he could not hear in his ears. It's why the prophets were able to see the landscape of reality, especially in the time of Jeremiah, and tell their contemporaries what it meant for their immediate future. Nobody's telling you the truth. They want to heal the wounds of the people and say all is fine when all is not fine. When Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world, we assume he's talking about a kingdom in heaven after this life is over. But it turns out that faith is a radically imaginative approach to this life here right now. The categories of winners and losers are not finally settled. The definitions that would seek to limit and define us, oh, you're a sinner, you're a loser, are not forged in Carnegie's steel. Jesus looks at life and how it could be under God's vision of creation. The original blessing of creation and of life. The original intent of creation. Not the fallen world that we live in and accept as the only alternative. Well, that's just the way things are. No, it is not just the way things are. It may be the way things have been accepted to be, but it does not have to remain that way. When faced with the dilemma, for example, of 5,000 hungry people late in the day, Jesus' disciples came to him with a question. What should we do, Lord? A, tell them to go home, find something to eat in the refrigerators. Tell them to go away hungry, B. And Jesus says, C, none of the above. We shall bless what we have, he says, and we shall multiply it. For those who benefit from the way things are, be careful. Don't hold on to things too tightly, Jesus is saying. They will change. Things always change. Change is the process by which we thrive and survive. Without it, we become extinct. So Jesus says to the poor, you have been told, well, they're losers and they're sinners, but those who are supposed to lead them by the Pharisees and the scribes, that's what they're calling their own people. But Jesus says, I say to them, blessed are the poor. Blessed are you who are poor right now. And to the meek who know their place in the social pecking order, blessed are the meek because they're going to inherit the earth. You know, we take that as, oh, that's nice, isn't it? That the poor will inherit the earth? No, man, that's a radical statement of revolution. That's what he's talking about. This is an upheaval. It happens. We see it, and that's why it's scary, because it cuts both ways. And to the rich, he says this, it will be more difficult for you to make it into the kingdom of heaven than for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. Wow, man, that is freaking hard hitting. Then who can go to heaven, Jesus? Well, with you guys, with me, it's impossible. But with God, nothing is. You know, it's the way that Jesus saw life and how he lived his life and called others to see and envision a life that threatened the religious leaders and the political leaders of his day. You know, they didn't just crucify him because he was just a little loudmouth man. No, this is a guy who's shaking the foundations of the world. For Jesus said to them, there is nothing settled about life or about the present situation. Nothing settled about it. To those who have spiritualized faith by insisting that it has to do with things that are always otherworldly than this world, Jesus is the Son of God and our Savior because he has given us permission to be in the world but not of it, not to be defined by its limited options, nor bound by its alternatives to God's idea of a just and hope-filled life for ourselves, our children, and our communities. There is mounting evidence in the field of cancer research, which I saw with my own eyes when I worked at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Hospital in New York City, that faith healing has very little to do with belief in God. The research from patients playing the game of Pac-Man when I was at Sloan Kettering, they had Pac-Man machines, especially for the kids, but they also had them for adults. And statistically, it was significant. What they found was that as those patients who played the Pac-Man game at Sloan Kettering, they got better, statistically, significantly better than those that simply had somebody come in and just pray over them. And the reason was they began to imagine in their mind's eye those white blood cells that their body produces as a victorious army gobbling up all of the invading cancer cells that were coming into their body. That's a powerful thing. A powerful thing. Faith in divine providence is not as important as mentally imaging the body as being healthy and ridding itself of cancer cells. Whoa. That's what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about the natural faith that we have as human beings. Faith in this sense is imaginative visioning that sees what medical science is just now catching up to. Our biblical ancestors knew this thousands of years ago. The power of belief, the power of what you see in your mind's eye, has amazing abilities that we're just beginning to scratch the surface of right now. What you believe in shapes your life's experiences. Right? That sounds profound, but it's really just behavioral science. If I act in a certain way, I'll begin to feel in a certain way. If I act in another way, I'll begin to feel in the way that that action leads me. To visualize something that is yet to be is just something that is unique to us as human beings. I don't think animals have that capacity. It's what separates us from them. It's also a human call to responsibility, though, and to stewardship. It's not just like anything goes. Because we've been entrusted as stewards by God to care for this beautiful creation. Remember, original blessing, not original curse. In the beginning, it was good. And everything that God had made, including us, was very good. To hang on to that vision, not the one of us as fallen, sinful, we can never do anything different. But a vision that says, no, we can be more like Jesus. We can see the world the way he saw it. We can see the world the way Bill Gates saw it. We can see the world the way Steve Jobs saw it. We can see the world the way other human beings have seen it that have changed the face of our earth. That is why what we dream on, what we visualize, is so very important, folks. Faith seeks to fulfill its own prophecy. And that is why we must always ask ourselves, what kind of vision is being projected to and for us? There are lots of visions. There are lots of false messiahs out there telling you about how the world is or will be. But I would ask you always to judge any vision simply by this criteria. Is it a vision of doom? Or is it a vision of hope? Is it a vision that is based in fear? Or a vision that is based in faith? Now, faith doesn't mean that we don't have to face hard realities and deal with things. It means we have to confront those things head on and see reality for what it is. There's no denial in it. But it is not illusionary. It is not something that is not dealing with reality. These are critical questions that we should be asking ourselves, especially at this time and place in our own country and in our own lives. Faith is simply living the alternative to what the world says is fixed. If we believe, for example, that climate change has absolutely nothing to do with us, well, guess what? We won't fix a thing. If we do see the sense in it that we actually do have an impact on the environment and that we can change that, we'll act in that way. It's not that hard to envision what can happen if we put our beliefs in the right place. If we believe that we can make a difference, then we will. If we believe that we cannot do anything, then we'll remain in our apathy and our cynicism and we'll feel victimized all the time. We're not victims. We have a role to play. It's that simple and it's that hard. No one can make you believe in the faith-filled vision of a kingdom that resembles Genesis 1, but nothing will stop those who see it from striving for it. And as Dr. Martin Luther King put it, and I believe this so true, that arc of justice in human history bends slowly, but it does bend towards justice. It's something to strive for. Even if we will not accomplish it in our own lifetime, which Paul says, you know, Apollos watered, I planted, but it's God that gave the growth. That's for us too. We're on a long-term building project, folks. We're not about just making something happen today and thinking it's all done. No, we're thinking way down the road, where we want to be, envisioning that, right? Faith is simply living as though it can be true. Faith in that sense, in the sense that Jesus is speaking about it here with his disciples in our passage, is simply envisioning and practicing an alternative future. It is daring to risk living by a new vision that says things don't have to always be at odds. People don't always have to be in conflict. People can cooperate, work together, build community, build love, build intimacy. Even when they disagree, they can do this. We do it here. I see it. Promise of life contained in that tiny, tiny seed of faith is the ground of all hope. It's just that tiny seed. It's kind of funny, too, in the sense that he says, if you had that small of faith, it's almost like saying, duh, you already have it. You either do or you don't. It doesn't matter how tiny it is. It is or it isn't. You already have it. And it's just daring you now, though, to risk living out of it. That's what he's doing. The promise of life contained in that tiny little seed is the ground of everything that happens that breaks new in our world. It is a great threat, though. That's also true because its vitality and its virulence is stronger than the powers of death, right? However, faith's vision is both constructive and it is destructive. It always threatens the status quo. If somebody has something that they're going to lose or think they're going to lose as a result of this, they'll fight it. That's what the Pharisees did. They fought Jesus every step of the way, not realizing that the promise of the kingdom was also for them, that they weren't going to be excluded. Just accept what God is saying to you. It always threatens the status quo, though. Instinctively, we know that, right? We know it's costly to follow in Jesus' footsteps. It means having to give up certain things in order to gain other things of value. There is always a choice that has to be made. We never can get away from the fact that we're condemned to freedom. And herein lies the threat. A dead God, a dead Jesus, lets other people speak on his behalf. But a living God, a resurrected Christ, speaks for himself. And he does that to each generation that comes along. Each generation gets to practice this visioning that Jesus had for us as a life. He is the God of the living, we say, and not the God of the dead, because people still to this day follow him. And because of them, the world is transformed for the better, even when we don't always see it on the macro level, because of all the good deeds, all the tiny little mustard seeds that all of you expend every day, a smile to somebody who's handed you a cup of coffee, a thank you. All of that helps build this kingdom because people still believe in his way, his truth, and his life. And therein lies the danger of Jesus' vision of a new heaven and a new earth. Be careful what you pray for. You might just get it. It is like a live grenade that has been thrown into the midst of us and it's rolling around. And you never know where it's going to go off in somebody's imagination and what's going to happen when they get caught up in that vision. I believe this church can be an alternative vision to the one which says you are on your own in this world. No one cares about you. You cannot make a difference. And if you can see this place as a place that embraces your hopes and your dreams and your worries and challenges your fears, doesn't say no, hang in there with your fears, but says no, let's look at an alternative to fear because fear never does anything. Roosevelt said it beautifully. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. And that's true. This can be a place, therefore, of refuge from the storm, a place where we are reignited and replugged in so that when we go out into the world and all those forces are seeking to tell us, no, 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 there is no other way to be, we can say, yes, 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 I have seen it with my own eyes. I've heard it with my own ears. I felt it by the touch of people next to me. If you believe in this place, invest far more than your money today. Your tithes, your pledges, whatever you give, that's great. And thank you very much for those. We cannot operate without them. But I ask you to invest far more than that. I ask you to invest your very lives in this place. Because if not here, not now, then where and when do you want to make a difference? Amen.